Okay, we're just about to start the class. We're just to do a brief audio check just to start. And we'll just start in a minute or two. We'll just ask everybody to refresh their browsers now. Again, once you hear the audio, just type audio OK on your screen. Let us know that you're picking up the sound, and we'll start momentarily. And again, if the classes are, you can't attend the full class, we do record the classes and they're posted online on the audio files link, so this way you could hear the class in its entirety. We'll just be starting momentarily, just to make sure everybody can hear the sound. And for those of you who are listening to the class in the recorded format, we do pause this way during the class. We pose questions and we allow everybody who's attending the class to ponder the question. So those pauses will be part of the recording. And again, once you hear the audio, just type in audio OK in the bottom of your screen. We'll just go through a few more moments just in terms of confirming that everybody can hear the sound. And today we'll be taking up the fundamentals of Judaism based on Maimonides, the Rambam, in his work, the Mishneh Torah, the very beginning. And it's good to see everybody back. It's Sri in New York, Holly in China, Lee in New York, Rivka. Esther in New York, and a lot of new people have come today, so I hope you'll enjoy the class. Esther in New York. Okay, looks like some of you are saying the audio is too low. We'll just make an adjustment now and you let us know if it's better. Okay, tell us how the audio is now. and you may have to just turn up the volume on your own speakers.
Okay, tell us how it is now.
And again, we'll be doing the Rambam's principles, the fundamentals of Judaism. Okay, if we just want to do an audio check once more, if the audio is sufficient, just type in audio okay. Let's see if we took care of the audio problem. Okay, Motion, New York. How's the audio now? Samuel in Paris. You also mentioned that the audio was not so good. How is that now? Okay, Patrick, Rav Avner, thank you. Holly in Chicago. Lee, I am Twirl. Tzvi, New York, even Boston, Amitai. Okay, we'll just check the mic connection, make sure that the sound is all right. It looks like it's okay for most of you. We're just going to unplug and replug just to make sure that the connections are clean. Please hold on. Okay, we'll just do one more round of confirmation on the audio. Make sure that the audio is sufficient right now. And it looks like that's going to be the level that we'll be able to get the audio at. Okay, Motion, New York, how's the audio? Daryl, thank you. Shoshana, thank you. Rivka, New York, thank you. David in San Francisco, good to see you. Dennis in Wisconsin. And one more time, Motion, New York, how's the audio now? Make sure the speakers are turned up. Okay, Ed in STL, not sure where that is. Okay, Daryl, thank you very much. Good to see you back. Okay, Davide. Thank you for the correction on that. Don't want to mispronounce your name there. Good to see you in line. Okay, so why don't we begin? And we're going to be referring to Maimonides in his laws of the Yesod HaTorah, right in the beginning, the fundamentals of Judaism. Okay, so I'm going to read to you the Hebrew, I'll translate it, and then we'll take questions as we proceed. So Rambam, and Rambam is the acronym for Moshe ben Maimon. So when we refer to Rambam, we're talking about Maimonides. So he writes as follows. He writes, Yesod Yesodos, the Omen of Chachmos, the principle of all principles, or the fundamental of all fundamentals, and the pillar of wisdom, the Omen of Chachmos, the pillar of wisdom. What is it? Leda, that you must know, Sheyesha Mutsoi Rishon, that there is a first cause, referring to God, of course. So again, and you may want to take notes on this in terms of the questions this week. Refer to the questions as we proceed. So in terms of his first statement, he says that the principle of all principles and the pillar of all sciences, of all wisdom. What is it? To know that there is a first cause. And he is the cause of everything that we find. Everything we find in the universe, he is the cause. There's no other. But he doesn't get to the, he gets later on to the point about God being one. That's something which is, we'll expound when we get to that actual law. Then he continues. Again, he says that he is the cause of all things that we find. The Chol HaNimtzaim, and anything that we find, be it in the heavens or on earth or what's between them. Lo nimtza'u, they would not be found. We would not see, we would not witness anything in existence. Ela me'amitas himtza'o, except because of the truth of his existence. Okay. The first question that we want to ponder is the distinction that he makes. In the very first statement, he says, the principle of all principles and the pillar of all wisdom is that you must know, and this is a command, this is one of the 613 commands, and from Rambam's statement, it is clear that it's the most primary of all commands, and that is that we must know that God exists, that there is a first cause. That there is a first cause. And if the sound at this point is okay, we should just confirm one more time, just so I'm getting feedback from you. Just type on your screen, audio okay 2. Type in audio okay 2 if the sound is now sufficient, and we'll continue. And again, we're referring to Rambam in the Sefer Mada, the very first book of his Mishneh Torah, his great work, the Mishneh Torah. Okay, looks like the sound is fine. All right. All right, so now the first question I'd like to pose to you is, without giving away anything on this, because our knowledge comes from using our own minds, thinking. So I'd like to let you think about the entire statement, and I'm going to read it again, and then I'm going to pause, and I would like to hear from you what you feel is a question. And if you have a question, type it in on the screen so I can see what your feedback is. Again, the statement of Maimonides is the principle of all principles, actually the fundamental of all fundamentals, and the pillar of all wisdom, of all sciences, is to know that there is a first cause, and that he is the cause for everything that we find, whether it be in the heavens, the earth, or anything in between them. Nothing would be found in existence except due for the truth of his existence. All right, that is the complete first statement, the first law of Rambam, of Maimonides. Now, what strikes you as a question? Principle of all principles and the pillar of all wisdom is to know that there is a first cause. All right, think about that. And if something strikes you as a question, please type it in. All right, so let's just pause for a second so you could all think that over. It's not a law in terms of the regular sense, but I'm referring to it because this Mishneh Torah, his work, deals with the principles of the law. So we can refer to this first one as not necessarily law, although it is regarding what he writes in the Mishneh Torah is regarding the laws. And the most primary of all laws is what the first of the Ten Commandments, and that is to know that God exists. Not belief, not blind faith, but to have knowledge. And D. Sands, no, it's not. We're not supposed to just believe because we're told. That's why he uses the word to know. Rambam's words are very exact. Okay, Yosef in New York. Yes, how does one know? How does one arrive at this? Exactly. What is the, in order to know this, how does one arrive at this principle? Okay. In terms of what Patrick in, I guess that's Netherlands. Patrick, what you're asking is, where does the first cause originate from? That's one of the issues that Maimonides is addressing here. He's saying that first cause, by definition, doesn't require creation. So he doesn't originate from anywhere. The concept of something having to be created is part of the created universe. But if something does not belong to the created universe, it itself does not need to be created. So God does not need creation. Right? And the idea, one of the basic ideas that he expounds over here, and we'll elaborate on that, is that God's existence is different than every other existence. All other existences, they had to come into existence. They weren't always in existence, meaning their existence, their very existence, is not necessary. But we refer to God as necessary existence. By definition, God exists. That's part of his nature. So existence didn't have to be given to God by something else. If you look at the entire universe and you see that things have properties and they have shape and form and they have laws that govern them, something had to cause these existences, and something had to give them their behavior, their patterns of behavior, their governing laws, and the design of their matter. So if these things had to be given a certain design, so then they must, and this applies to everything, so whatever created the physical universe is himself not physical, because he created the physical. Prior to God's creation of the physical universe, there was no such thing as physical laws. There was no such thing as the need for creation. And let me just look at a few other questions. Dennis is writing, perhaps you could know, perhaps you could type the statement here. Okay, that would be a little bit much, Dennis. I'll repeat it again if you'd like. Let me just read the other questions. I am Twirl. We're not talking about fundamentally good or anything that we should worship yet. Right now we're just talking, we have to restrain ourselves to the actual statement. What command do we know causes us to be commanded to believe God? The command is in the Torah, and that is that we should know that God exists. That's the first of the Ten Commandments. Carla would like to know, by what means are we to know that this is a correct statement, okay? All right. Well, like we're expounding, if we just witness the universe, we have senses that are accurate. And we see the universe exists. And we also see that there's age. Scientists are able to date the universe. And we're not going to go into the question of the incommensurate number of years based on the Torah's number and the science. That's something which we can go into, but not at this point. But we see that that matter exists and that it had to have been caused. Nothing can create itself. Simple reason will enable a person like Abraham, who was an idolater himself when he was younger. But then as he pondered, he used his own God-given gift of intelligence and reason, which God gave to every one of us, that we can perceive the universe and we can come to true conclusions using deduction and induction and various formulas of reasoning. So in terms of looking at an object, we know the object didn't always exist. We know the object couldn't create itself. That's an impossibility. Something can't create itself. Because if it created itself, it didn't do anything. And also, if at a certain point it wasn't in existence, so there's nothing there to do the act of creation. So there's two arguments against saying that something created itself. That's impossible. Reason tells us that. And reason, again, will demand that we realize that there has to be something external to the entire universe which caused this creation. So reason would answer that that question in terms of how do we know that something exists. And the question about where do we know that we have this obligation to know that a God exists, well, that again is the Torah. And we went through a couple of times the concept of the proof of Sinai. And that was the revelation of an intelligent voice emanating from a fiery mountain that was witnessed by over 2 million people. And had that story been a fable or a fabrication, it would not be transmitted by anybody as truth. But the fact that we see that we have the story intact as witnessed by numerous people and the number of people and the names of who those people were and the tribes and where they traveled from and where they traveled to, all the details show us that just like any other event in history we know is true. It could not have been passed down because people would not pass down a fallacy, let alone an identical fallacy. So due to that, we understand that the Torah was given, and it was given by a being that is intelligent, that is not governed by the laws of nature. That's why God created the miracle as a voice, an intelligent voice speaking words from inside of fire. Because fire is the one element that no biological organism can exist in. Any other element, water, earth, air, those do not contradict life. But if you see fire, so then you understand that if there's a voice emanating from fire, that voice, the source of that voice, can't be of a biological nature. It has to be something which is not of this world. That is precisely why God designed, he orchestrated the whole event of Sinai in that manner. And giving his Torah, giving a law, one law, and part of it being that you should not add on to it and you shouldn't subtract from it, that shows us clearly that this is the complete system and it should not be altered forever. And that's why this precludes any type of truth to any other religion or any other alteration of what God gave to Moses at Sinai. Now let's get back to let me just see if there's any other questions here. Okay, Holly in Chicago is asking, between heaven and earth and everything in between it, except for, I'm not sure what you're writing, what does this mean? Well, when Rambam writes that he is the cause of all existences from on heaven, in the heavens, in the earth, and anything in between them, it means to encompass everything in creation. Because that governs all areas. The heavens would expand above us, the earth is what's below us, and everything in between, whether it be birds, whether it be clouds, the rain, everything which we witness had to have been created. Okay, Now, going back to the text, we have to understand what exactly is the significance of the actual statement that he made. All right, so let's try to concentrate now on the text itself. Okay, is everything clear up to this point? If it is, just type an okay on your screen if everything is clear up to this point. The angels as well, Tzvi. The angels too, everything, the rabbis comment on Maimonides' words, and actually the Maimonides himself will address that. And again, if the sound is okay, and you have the question as well, just type an okay on your screen, and I'd like to address the actual words of Maimonides, of Rambam. All right, very good. Davide, yes, angels are recognized in Judaism. We have to understand what they are. They are not physical creations, but they are creations, meaning man is not the only creation that has intelligence. Man is a combination of both the physical and the metaphysical. He has a spiritual aspect and he has a physical aspect. Angels are things which have intelligence but are lacking any physical component. Now, I think what catches our attention over here is when Rambam says the fundamental of all fundamentals and the pillar of all wisdom. Well, let me ask you a question. What is the difference between those two things? He doesn't mince words. Rambam does not repeat himself unnecessarily. So when he talks about the difference between yesodos, which are fundamentals, and wisdom, we have to understand, what does he mean, the fundamental of all fundamentals and the pillar of all wisdom? Okay, does everybody hear that question, that distinction? That's the first thing he states. That should be the first thing we take up. Rabbi Yosef, I assume that the R is for Rabbi. The Melachim are spirit beings, are they not? Yes, they are non-physical. Okay, Eli Marcy, okay, Ben Noah, good. Let's see if we can understand now Maimonides' distinction. What does he mean, the fundamental of all fundamentals? What's the difference between the fundamental and between sciences? And I think that the following statements of Rambam are going to support a distinction I'd like to suggest. I'd like to mention also in the meantime that the Bereshis, it's interesting, you can ask, why does the Torah start with Bereshis? So there's different reasons given. And again, we know the Torah is not a history book. It's a system of ideas. Well, we'll have to, okay, D. Sands is asking, what do we mean the source of all wisdom? It's a tricky phrase. True. We have to think into it. So let me just elaborate in terms of the concept of, why does Bereshis start? Why is the beginning of the Torah Bereshis? Additionally, each morning our prayers start off with the words, blessed be the one who spoke and the world came into existence. Blessed be the one who spoke and the world came into existence. It's the first thing we mention in the morning in our prayers. And I think part of the reasoning, or maybe the fundamental reason why both the Torah starts off with Bereshis and our prayers start off with Bereshis, is going to be central to the discussion here. Because as we're talking, we're realizing that Maimonides is saying that the most primary concept, if we just paraphrase, and the most primary concept we must have is that there is a cause to everything. There's a creator. And that's essential to our knowledge. So therefore, the most primary bit of knowledge is to know that there is a creator. And this should be knowledge. It should be something that we all prove to ourselves. We shouldn't live our lives based on blind faith or an assumption or something which is not clear. Okay, Gabe, correct. It seems to me that fundamentals and pillar are, in fact, the same. But if Maimonides is using different words, there must be a reason. He goes, and Gabe is continuing, and he's saying that everything is built on a foundation, as a pillar also supports all above. Correct. But there could be a reason why he uses pillar in terms of sciences. But answer my question. What is the difference between a fundamental and a science? That is the question right now. Okay, Holly's making a good distinction. Wisdom equals experience. Fundamental equals foundation. Okay, you may want to expound more on what you mean by experience, Holly. What is a science and what is a fundamental? That's the question. How would you distinguish between those two? Okay, Holly, that's true. Experience brings wisdom. But I'll elaborate on my question to you. In what manner, well, that's not a good way to put it. Experience belongs to what realm? Let me put it that way. Okay, Daryl is saying a very good point, that a fundamental equals rules, whereas a science is application of those fundamentals. Okay, very good. But we could refine that even more, but that's a very good step. Rachel in New York, you're saying the fundamentals are things we accept with no explanation, and science tries to explain things. Not true. Fundamentals have to be proven as well. They're no less subject to proof than sciences. The question is, where does science come in? So Daryl's mentioning a science is an applied, is an application of those fundamentals, whereas the fundamentals themselves are the abstract rules. Tamara is suggesting that a fundamental is given upon, which wisdom is built upon. Well, you seem to be referring to a fundamental, Tamara, as an axiom, sort of like just a postulate, something which we just have to start out with in order to move further. But the fact is that this is something we can arrive at an understanding. And again, Maimonides says, Lieda, you should know. Meaning this knowledge of God's existence, of a creator that caused everything that we see in the heavens and the earth and everything in between, the fact that these things are created, but that there is a creator, is the most fundamental of all fundamentals, and it is the pillar upon which all sciences are based. Okay, Lee is saying a very good point. We're just taking Daryl's point a little bit further. Everybody should look on your screen. Look at Lee from New York, his last entry. Experience belongs to the realm of our lives, our realm, as opposed to God's realm. Okay, excellent. Okay, let me just elaborate on what Lee is saying, because he's hit the nail on the head. And again, good to see you, Lee. I'm glad you were able to join us again. Your input last time was also really appreciated and very enjoyable to have you. What I believe Maimonides is talking about here is the most broad distinction you could make. And that is, you have to realize that prior to creation, and Maimonides goes into this later on, and he makes a statement that in the next law, I'll read it to you. He says, if you will suppose on your heart, on your knowledge, that God is not in existence, if you would suppose that, meaning that's an impossibility, so that's why Maimonides formulates that. And since I'm going to be reading inside, I'm not going to be able to look at the screen, so just hold off on the entries on screen while I'm reading. And then when I ask you for more entries, this way I won't be able to, you know, I don't want to miss anything that any of you are writing. So for the moment, just hold off on the entries on screen. And let's just elaborate on what Daryl said and also what Lee said. Let's just read the next two statements of Maimonides. Okay, now we're in the laws of Yesod HaTorah, chapter 1, and it's I'll just refer to it as law, even though it's not literally law. But it's part, it formulates what's necessary for our laws. So it's chapter 1, law 2. He says as follows, and if you would bring it upon your knowledge, if you would think, if you would assume that God would not exist, ain davar echad yochol emtzos, then nothing else would be able to exist. All right, now this is going back to the point that everything exists only because God wills it to exist, which is completely different than God's existence. God did not need to be given existence. And that may not be something that we can really fathom completely because, again, our knowledge is very limited, especially in respect to God. And God even told the highest of all prophets, he told Moshe Rabbeinu, Moses, that a man can't know me while he's alive. So our ability to apprehend absolute clarity about the truth about God is impossible, but we can approach it. So the first thing Maimonides says is that if you'd assume that God wouldn't exist, nothing else could possibly exist, because the existence of everything else, by definition, is constant. It constantly requires God's input. And actually, the commentary here on the Mishnah Torah states as follows. And he sustains everything by flowing to it its existence regularly. And because of this, they need him. Meaning they, meaning everything in existence requires God's will to exist. We don't just exist without God's will. It's not that God made us and now we can exist without any assistance. That's impossible. The mere fact that something exists requires, in our terms, needs to be sustained constantly by God's will. So we are only in existence because of his constant will. But he is in existence because of his nature. His existence is what we call necessary existence. It's not dependent. Our existence and the existence of everything we see in the universe is dependent. We did not always exist. By the very fact that the universe did not always exist proves that it didn't have to exist. Why does it exist? God's will. So again, if we would assume that God wouldn't exist, nothing else could exist. And now law three, he says as follows. And if you would assume on your knowledge, a person would make an assumption that all of the existences of the whole universe that we see would vanish, would cease to exist, except for God, he would continue to exist. And he would not be nullified at all due to the extinction of everything else. God would not be affected one iota if everything would cease to exist. If he would cause everything not to exist, it would not affect his existence at all. Because all of the things that we find in the universe need him. And he, blessed be he, ain od tzarach. He does not need anything in the universe, meaning all existences need God to continue to exist, not just to be brought into existence, but to be sustained. In our existence, we require his constant will. But he does not need any of them, and not even one of them. Therefore, his truth, his underlying truth of his existence, is not like the truth of anything else, which means to say that the primary nature of everything is completely different than God. Again, everything else needs to be brought into existence and needs to be sustained in existence. And that is by God's constant will. Now, let me just see if there's anything posted. Please hold off again until I can just see what everybody else had written up to this point. So just give me one moment. I just want to read what a couple of you have written here. Hold on. And again, if you just want to give a confirmation on screen, let me know that the sound is still okay. Just type in okay. Okay, just type in okay on your screen. Let me know the sound is good. And let me just see what you wrote. All right. Okay, Rabbi Yosef or R. Yosef, that's incorrect. We were not made for his good pleasure. God derives nothing from his creations. Pleasure is a human expression or human experience, and God does not partake of pleasure. And he did not make man for anything he needs. So it is it's completely false that God made us for his pleasure. And Esther in New York, if somebody wants to just type on the screen, she can go back to the home page on the live classes that she can download the Windows Media Player for Macintosh. Esther in New York just typed on screen, unfair for Mac. I'm not sure if she's applying it to herself or somebody else, but if somebody just wants to write a note to Esther that she can go back to the main page of the live classes, she'll see a link to download the necessary files. Okay, Dennis, we're referring to Maimonides' Mishneh Torah, the very first page. Now, getting back to Daryl's point and Lee's point, what is the difference between Yesod HaYesodos, the fundamental of all fundamentals, and the pillar of all wisdom? So it's exactly as Daryl and Lee had said. There are two realms. There is a realm in terms of the world, the physical world. So that deals with sciences. That deals with the behavior of all objects. But God is not contingent. His greatness is not, or his truth. The truth about God is not contingent. It doesn't depend on the fact that he created the world. Even prior to the existence of the world, there are truths about God. There was just nobody around to perceive them. But the creation of the universe does not affect God in any way. What the creation does, God created the world in order that there can be beings like man and angels that can perceive his greatness and can enjoy all the concepts that are true about God. If God did not create the universe, like Maimonides says, God would not be affected at all. Yet the truths about God's existence would still be there. He would still be one who is can create, because God does not change. God's nature does not change. Nothing can affect him, so he does not change. So he is a creator, regardless of whether or not he made anything. Okay, Ed in STL, thank you very much for posting that. And Lee as well, thank you. Rachel in New York, thank you. Okay, so now this is what I think Maimonides is referring to. And I think it's a very nice concept, one which I did not see before. But looking over his words and being exact with his language, you have to ask why he's making a separation. So when he says that there, the knowledge of God, the knowledge of a creator, it forms the essential of two realms. It forms the essential piece of information in two different realms. In the realm of Yesodos, meaning fundamentals, fundamentals are not things which deal necessarily with the existence of the universe. So it deals just with the fact that God exists. And what is God? The best that we can apprehend. But then there's also the fact that this idea that there's a creator is also the pillar of all wisdom, of all sciences. Oh, sciences are now restricted to the world of the universe. Sciences deal exclusively with the created universe. Therefore, Maimonides made a very clear distinction, and he stated that the knowledge of there being an existence, which is the cause of everything, is necessary in two areas. It's necessary in terms of your fundamentals, meaning just fundamental knowledge of God removed from creation. And then also it's necessary in terms of, it's a pillar, it supports all sciences. And I say support, somebody mentioned why does he use the term pillar? It supports something. Meaning a support is something that's external to the thing which it supports. Right? If you put something on a pedestal, the pedestal is one thing and the object is something else. So when we say that it supports wisdom, it's because the wisdoms that we see, the sciences that we see in the world, are something different than the actual principles of God. Again, God's existence predated the universe. So his truths predated anything. So therefore, once he created the universe, so those truths now serve as a support to those things that came later in time. So let's just make sure we have the idea clear. the realization, the knowledge, the conviction that there is a creator, that there is something out there that is the cause for the universe, is necessary in terms of our knowledge of one area. That's the first thing, the fundamentals. That's restricted in terms of our knowledge of God, not relative to creation. But it's also necessary in terms of sciences, which are relative to creation. So you have to understand there are two realms. We live our life primarily in the second realm. And we wouldn't have any of the knowledge of either realm if there was no such thing as creation, because we would not be here. So creation did two things. It now was the expression of God's wisdom in all aspects that he created. Plus, creation brought man to the universe. It brought us onto the stage in order that we could now perceive. We are the only beings that have this ability, the only creation in the physical realm that has this ability. And we said also the angels also, but angels are not a physical creation, but they are a creation. They are a creation as much as we are a creation. Everything except for God had to have a cause. Nothing else has existence that's eternal. For example, Aristotle was of the belief that the world exists eternally. Eternally to Aristotle means always existed in the past and will always exist in the future. But he basically denies the concept of there being a creation. He looks at the world, I think in his language, as a shadow to God, meaning as long as God existed, the world existed. So they were both eternal. Okay, so this concept, and again, somebody just wrote, Shoshana's writing, Ani Ma'amin. I'm not sure why you're writing that, but we don't take Ma'amin in terms of blind faith. The word Ma'amin is the same word as Amen. When a person says a blessing, you have to say Amen. You have to say, yes, this is true. I attest to the truth of your statement. If a person doesn't say it, he's ridiculed, because it's like he's denying. Like if I say that blessed are you, God, our God, King of the world, who created fruits of the tree. Now, if somebody listening to me does not say Amen, that's ipso facto a denial. They don't accept it. But that's why we are commanded to say Amen after somebody says a blessing. We have to attest this is true. I confirm this. It's not that I believe it. That's why Maimonides says here, Rambam says here that Lieda, it's a mitzvah. But it's interesting. He doesn't start out by saying it's a mitzvah. That he says later on. He talks about the command. He doesn't say that until chapter 1, law 6. But in the beginning, he's talking about knowledge, even outside of the realm of Torah commands, Torah obligations. This is an essential concept that's necessary. That's why he doesn't say, my understanding is that he does not say that this is a fundamental of the Torah, right? He says it's a fundamental of all fundamentals, meaning in terms of our knowledge of God, this is the most primary knowledge we must have, that he is the creator and existed before anything else and is the cause for everything else. That is the most primary bit of knowledge we can and must have about God. But that's not even regarding our Torah obligations. That's just in terms of knowledge, of knowing what is true. Our existence is limited, and our obligation is, and our objective, based on our design. We're the only beings that have intelligence here on Earth. Therefore, we realize that this is the objective of why we exist, is to use this intelligence, not just to have belief, but to have knowledge, conviction, clarity, something which we see as absolutely true. And this is necessary even outside of the obligations of the Torah, in terms of, because you see the Torah was given later on. So what was the nature of man's realization of God prior to obligations? It was the essence of his whole being. Even before the Torah was given, over 3,300 years ago, this was something which Abraham saw as being something so important that he risked his life to teach people. So we see that Maimonides does not say it is the essential of Torah. He doesn't say that for another six laws. The first law, he says, it's the fundamental of ideas regarding God, of Yesodos, of all fundamentals of knowledge. And it's also the pillar, something which is a pillar to wisdom. And you see now how precise his language is, because when he says it's a pillar to wisdom, so a pillar to something, the pillar is external to the thing. So just like those fundamentals always existed before creation, so then once creation came into effect, now all the sciences that had dragged along with creation are now supported by that which predated it. So just like a pillar is something which is external to the wisdom, excuse me, just like a pillar is external to the thing it supports, that's why Maimonides here uses the term, it's a pillar, the knowledge of God is a pillar. It's a supporting object to the wisdom, to the sciences, because sciences, we're saying, are now reserved for the world of the created. So again, like what Lee and Darrell were saying, you hit it right on the head. There are two realms. There is in God's realm, whatever we can apprehend about him and his nature and his justice. And then there's also what he created. But he doesn't change at all because of creation. But the only thing is, we can't perceive him without creation. He made us as sensual beings, so we require to use these senses to start the path to knowledge. So in both areas, we have to realize that there was a point that wasn't creation, but that does not make God's truth any less. God is not affected. That's why Maimonides in the very next law says, if you think that he would not exist, nothing else would exist. But if you think everything else would not, if everything else in the universe would completely be extinct, that would not affect God. Meaning his existence is absolute truth, regardless of whether he made the universe or not. So you see, it straddles two areas. God, and also what he created. So that's why right in the beginning, right at the outset, Maimonides makes this distinction. And that's why he goes into the next two laws, and he says that there's, even if you would remove everything from existence, that would not affect God at all. Okay, so if that's clear up to this point, let's just type an okay on screen, and then we'll pause for questions. So let's just first, if everything's clear, please type an okay on your screen. And then after that, let's just give that a minute, and then I'll take questions up to this point. And if you wrote any questions up to this point, and I may have not seen it on screen, you can feel free to type it in again. But first, just type an okay. Let me just make sure that the idea is clear. And then after that, we'll take questions. All right, go ahead. And while you're doing that, I'll just comment on one statement. Davide is asking, why do people create images of angels? Is that wrong for us? Yes, unless we have the Torah telling us that the angel is a pillar of fire or things of that nature, so it would be wrong to project their own view onto it. And if there are certain visions and the prophet saw an angel in a certain form, like Maimonides says, every vision to each prophet was different depending on his understanding and his own method of association, his own method of understanding. Because what a date tree might mean to me would mean something completely else. It would have a different connotation to somebody else. So that's why God always speaks in the language of the prophets. That's something which Maimonides talks about. Okay, so if there's any questions now, feel free to type them in. Be succinct. Holly, correct. A pillar supports the foundations of our knowledge in our realm. Sciences, wisdom. You mean to say sciences, yes. Now we have to ask the question, why is this so? Now that we understand what Rambam is saying, now we have to understand why this is so. That is the next question for you to think about now. Why is it so that the knowledge of God, of there being a creator, is essential to all sciences? Let's take that one first. That will be the next question I'd ask you. And let me just direct this to Moshe in New York. Again, Moshe is the one who actually put this whole forum together for us. So we shall thank Moshe for his patience and literally hours and hours of work to put together these interactive audio classes. But Moshe, let me just ask you if the sound is better now. Let me know. And again, the next question that we're taking up, unless you have questions yourself, would be, why is it so that it is essential to our knowledge of science that we know there's a creator? Why can't a person be a scientist and study the universe, or be a chemist or a physicist, and get the same knowledge without this realization that there is a first cause to everything? Why is the knowledge of there being a first cause of God essential as a pillar of all sciences? Okay, Moshe, thank you. Okay, does everybody have the next question now? In terms, okay, Holly, listen to the question again. We have to be very precise in our thinking. And by doing so, we benefit ourselves the next time we learn, because then we've raised our thinking, our analysis, to an even higher and more refined standard. The question is, why is it essential that there be knowledge of a creator? Why is that essential knowledge to knowledges of science? Meaning, why can't I arrive at the same knowledge of any area of science compared to somebody else? Let's say I don't know about God, and somebody else does. How is that going to affect his knowledge differently than mine? If we're both studying the same things in the same laboratory with the same microscopes, why is there going to be any difference in my knowledge as opposed to somebody else who has knowledge of God? So when you write that because we must be aware of who is above us and who we are below, that doesn't explain how it's essential to science. So I want you to tell me how knowledge of a creator is essential to all sciences. And as well, before we even go further, it should be clear now to everybody that it's impossible that anything exists without there being a creator. You should have complete conviction, not belief. And again, this is a command. But you should have complete conviction that there is a God, there is a creator. And if that's not clear, now is the time to ask. All right, so before we even move further to the second question, I should really stop and ask you if it is clear to you that there must be a creator, and you understand with 100% conviction that there has to be. And don't allow emotions about, well, I've never heard him or I've never seen him, cloud the issue. The question here is now strictly limited to the realm of intelligence. Can you see absolutely clear with your intelligence that, yes, it's true, nothing I look at in the universe could make itself? These things come and go, and they have certain behavior, and they have certain dimensions and certain properties, and there's certain science to how all these things work. And the prophets tell us that a person who has the ability to study the areas of the sciences and doesn't, it says, upon this person that's written, the works of God he has not seen. Umaisei yadav lo hibit. I'm just paraphrasing. I'm not sure if those are the exact words. Okay, let me just take a look. But again, this should be the most primary and most, you should be 100% convinced of this idea. Okay, let me just look at some of the entries here. Okay, Ellie Marie, you're saying a good point, but I'd like you to elaborate. Ellie is writing, if you have a wrong beginning assumption, everything else will be wrong. Okay, explain that further. Lee is suggesting, science, being rational, believes that everything has a cause. Without a first cause, the principle wouldn't make any sense. Okay? Don Turton, I'm not sure what you mean. Maine, Dennis in Wisconsin is writing, nature abhors a vacuum. Okay, explain that. Tamara is writing, God created an order to the world and things in it. True. Patrick in Netherlands says, materialists say that we created God. All right, let them prove it. Everything is based on reason. Statements without support are meaningless. Carla in Virginia, if God is the source of all sciences, but they don't acknowledge him, they will base their conclusions on something else. Excuse me. And they don't acknowledge him, they will base their conclusions on something else being the source. Okay. True. Ellie Marie is just clarifying at my request. without knowing that there is a creator. You evaluate everything you see incorrectly. Okay, Ellie, good. Good second step. Now, why is that? Why would we evaluate everything incorrectly without knowing there is a creator? R. Yosef is saying, did Hashem create the laws of thermodynamics, or were they already in effect and he used them? Well, I think you can answer that, R. Yosef. If there are laws of thermodynamics already, I mean, where did they come from? You can't say that they existed and he made use of them. Well, what made the laws of thermodynamics? Dennis is writing, you can't have something without starting with something. Thus, God had to create something before there is anything. True. Okay. But why would my knowledge, again, the question I'm asking you all right now is this. In what manner is my knowledge of science, let's say I study science, let's say we'll take one of you, for example, Lee or Daryl. Let's say we both sit in the room, we both have the same books, and we both study the exact same science. But you know that God exists, and I don't know that. What is going to be lacking? According to Maimonides, the knowledge of God is the pillar of all wisdom. So if I don't have this knowledge of God, that means my wisdom is severely crippled. I would like you to explain to me in what way is my wisdom of these sciences that I studied the exact same amount as Lee or Daryl, why is my wisdom crippled? And Lee and Daryl have any more? They studied the same books I did. Okay, it's important that you have the precise question. Okay, is the question clear to everybody? If not, ask. Again, we're dealing with the most primary areas of knowledge. And that's why I failed to do this class. And we're going to continue tomorrow at 1:30 and Wednesday at 1:30. And we'll see how the weeks go. We may increase the classes. But I think it's necessary that, you know, we do it on a continual basis, but we really approach knowledge, which is our whole objective, starting with the beginning. Okay, tomorrow, thank you. Okay, let's just see. Ellie Marie is writing, if you don't know God exists, you leave out the spiritual aspect of science. Okay, Rambam Ben Noach, 31, good to see you again. Rambam goes into extensive detail about correct conceptions of God in God for the Perplexed. It's true. Holly in Chicago, when things are scientifically proven, we gain better knowledge of God. Okay? But that's not answering the question. Daryl is writing, you may attribute any of the creations or laws to something other than the originator of all laws. Okay? Shaw is writing, you would try to explain the reasons for the sciences as being caused outside the power of God. Okay, good. Everybody just take a look at what Shaul just wrote. I'm going to take that as a springboard. Lee is writing, without knowledge of God, all earthly acquired knowledge has no real substance. Okay, Lee, why? D. Sands is writing, people who believe in Jesus have similar ways of explaining how he's God or the Son of God. Okay, we'll get into that. We'll show how that's impossible. Okay, well, it's not necessary to play devil's advocate, D. Sands. Really, you should, you know, if you have a question, it's because this these classes should be about what matters to you. So it's, you know, I really would prefer that you ask questions that you're really concerned about. Then if somebody else has a question, let them ask it. Okay, Patrick in Netherlands, your question is clear. We lack a dimension if we only approach it from the created material dimension. I'm going to show you how it's not only you're lacking a dimension, but you're lacking complete knowledge. Okay, D. Sands, my pleasure. Okay, let me tell you what I think on this, unless you'd like to have another minute to think about it, because again, you know, the thinking aspect is the most important aspect of study. Wait one more moment and see if any of you want to write any suggestions in terms of why that knowledge of a creator is essential to all the sciences. Right now we're just talking about the second category, sciences. Why is that? Why does Maimonides say? We understand the distinction, this knowledge, which is of fundamentals regarding that there being a creator. But of course, that's all something which we only see because there is a creation. But even aside from creation, if nothing would exist, it would not affect God one iota. There would still be truths that are absolutely true. That's what I believe he means to be alluding to by saying there's a fundamental of all fundamentals. That's in the area even outside of creation. God's greatness does not depend on the fact that we are here to attest to the creation. But that's the only way we could know him. But we are dealing with how this knowledge of there being a creator is fundamental. It's essential if we are to have an accurate knowledge of any area of science. Okay, Tamar in Florida is writing, God created with design, order, symmetry, organization, and without acknowledging God and this attribute, it is hard to see the pattern of creation in many areas. Well, I don't agree. I think you can still see the pattern of creation without any knowledge of God. Ellie Marie is saying, acknowledging God allows us to be cooperative with him in our study of science. There's no cooperation in studying science with God. There's no cooperation. Tamara's writing further, when you see the pattern, you can see God in the design, as in the heavens declare the glory of God. All right. R. Yosef, science is man's attempt to understand God's, I guess you meant knowledge. Dennis is asking, the Big Bang Theory does not acknowledge God, does it? Of course, it definitely acknowledges God. Unless they say by a Big Bang that it happened outside of God. Then they have a completely wrong concept of the Big Bang. But Big Bang means that there was a certain point where everything commenced. There was a point of commencement to the universe. Okay. All right, so let's hold off on the entries for a moment. Let me give you my suggestion on this. And then you can tell me what you think. All right? So I think as follows. Why is it? We understand what the distinction of Maimonides made. But now, between fundamentals and between sciences. But exactly how is knowledge of God the pillar of all sciences? See, the thing is, if we study a science, and we, for example, if we become zoologists, and we study every single animal, every single one, if that was possible, and their behavior, and their living patterns, and their physical design, and their eating patterns, and why some have a gestation period of a year, some of 9 months, like humans, some of even less. And even if we had all the knowledge, but we did not know that God exists, what we'd be lacking is what the ultimate purpose is of these creations. Let's take an example I gave last week. We were talking about water. Let's say we study water. Water is a creation like anything else. If we study water without knowing there's a God, so we do not arrive at an appreciation for a creator, meaning all knowledge that does not eventuate in an appreciation for God is lacking its real objective. God did not make things so they should just exist by themselves. The whole reason God made the universe and put man here is in order that we should now have means by which, a physical universe in which we can, it's like a laboratory. It's a laboratory in which we can study and realize God's existence. And we will constantly gain in our appreciation of God and his justice and his kindness and his mercy and his punishment and every other aspect that's available to man as we continue studying all parts of the universe and Torah. But if we don't have that knowledge that God exists, so then we are not arriving. We could study every single aspect of water or of animals. But if we don't arrive at a knowledge of how this reflects God's wisdom, then the ultimate goal of the knowledge is lost. That's why Maimonides is saying that the most fundamental of any science is to first have knowledge that this is that God created this science, that God created this universe. So since The answer is that since the objective of everything that we do in life should really be to come to an attraction, a love, an appreciation for this creator, if anything we do does not contribute to that, then it's wasteful. So if our attempt at knowledge is just because, oh, it's theoretically nice, but we don't arrive at a knowledge of God, so then it missed its mark. In that individual, it missed its mark. I can have just as much knowledge as somebody else, but if they have knowledge of God and I don't, so all my knowledges of the science never point to a creator. It never reflects this main concept that we're supposed to arrive at. Okay, now just let me know if that's clear. It's a short answer, but that is the answer. Okay, if that's clear, just type an okay on your screen. If you have a question, please type that too. Again, what I'm saying is that an appreciation for the Creator is where our knowledge has to eventuate at. If we don't get there, so then we don't have the real true understanding of this thing either. Not only do we miss the mark, but we more primarily, let me elaborate, I really didn't give the full answer. I'm sorry. If we don't realize there's a God, so then we don't understand how this fits into the whole plan. We don't really have a true knowledge of what we're studying. I can't have true knowledge of water if I don't know that God exists. Because once I put God into the equation, for example, if I just look at water and I look at man and the whole earth, but I have no knowledge of God, well, I'm not going to arrive at the concept that God is merciful. But how would I know that God is merciful by studying water? So the analogy we gave last week is that we said, well, look at the way God made water. He made it in a way that it is malleable, which means that it can conform to any container that you put it in or any place that it's located, it conforms. So even though a certain riverbed might be very narrow at a certain point, the water can contract and can flow through that narrow area, meaning it could reach far reaches of the earth. Because since water is necessary for all life, plants and animals and humans, if they wouldn't have the water, so that would be unjust. So in order to understand a certain amount of justice about God, what God does is when he creates the world, he shows how things that are so essential, for example, air is the most plentiful resource because it's the most essential resource. Okay, water is next on the list. So water is also plentiful, but it is limited. It's limited by when it rains, where the water is located. But nonetheless, he creates it in a way that it can reach all the recesses of where life exists on Earth. And you'll see that there's no place that needs water that doesn't have it. Even in the desert, where there are insects, or there's certain mammals, or reptiles that live there, far from any reaches of water. How do they get water? God has a system. I saw it once televised, how certain animals have an instinct. And again, when animals do things like birds building a nest or things of that nature, they may be very elaborate structures when you study them, but they don't know what they're doing. They don't have intelligence. They function by instinct. They have an instinct at a certain time of the year just to get a twig and put it and get another one and put it next to that one. They have no vision of the full picture, as a rabbi once explained. There's no abstract knowledge of the final nest that they're creating. It's purely instinctual. And in terms of these animals and reptiles and insects that live in the desert, that where there's no water around, but they require water too, how do they get water? They have an instinct that by the opening of the hole in the ground where they live, in the evening they will put rocks in front of the opening of their dwelling. And what happens is all air has a certain amount of moisture. And what happens is in the morning, the air, since rocks are very cool, the air will cause the water in it to condense on the rock, and those animals come out and then they lick off the moisture, which is sufficient for their needs. They lick off the rock, and that's how they get their moisture. So you see how God's wisdom is everywhere, and if we study this, we'll come to an appreciation for his wisdom and his justice. But without a knowledge of God, we just look at it, well, it's an animal. It just functions that way. But then we don't come to the real nature of this animal. We won't really understand its true purpose without the knowledge of God. there may be a reason for man. I mean, all these creatures exist for man to gain knowledge or to make some sort of a use out of. We get leather from certain animals, meat from certain animals, ivory from elephants and other tusks, the chauffeur from the ram. There are many usages that we get, and by gaining these usages without knowledge, without God being part of the picture, so then we don't arrive at an appreciation of why this thing was made. But now that we know that God made it, now we understand that there's a certain mercy to man in the fact that God put this here for man, and it gives us a greater knowledge of the Creator. The truth is also that without God, so we look at all these sciences as independent. But if we know that God created all the sciences now, and we see how they interwork, and that there's an exchange of properties, and that one science complements the other, and that the biological system of man and the way that man ingests and digests food, it works perfectly with the things which God made as food. So is it accidental that all the things that are edible supply the exact nutrients that man needs, and that man can deliver the waste from his body in a certain manner as well? Then now we see a combination of sciences. Not only do the independent sciences bear out great wisdom, but now we see how they're complementary. Now, with this knowledge, we think about who organized all the sciences, who created these sciences. And now we have a greater appreciation for even more deeper wisdom that we just arrived at. Okay, let me just pause for a second and take a look on screen, which I haven't looked at for a few. Okay, Ben Noach. So then, without the knowledge of God, there is no knowledge of purpose. Correct. Therefore, there is no objective means to measure any other purpose. Yes, without knowledge of God, if a person does not arrive at a knowledge of God, if he doesn't have that knowledge of God and he sees all the other sciences, well, it doesn't mean he shouldn't study them, because hopefully he will start arriving at the knowledge, but it misses its mark. That's true. If a person does not arrive at a knowledge of God with all of his studies in his whole life, then he has missed the boat. There is no purpose to it. Just the knowledge of how these things work itself without knowing there's a creator, that you're right, it misses the whole mark. Okay, D. Sands is writing. One scientist says, I discovered this thing. Another says, I discovered this thing, and it shows God exists. Yes, a person could see that the knowledge that's in creation is just not human knowledge. So he realizes there's something outside that created all these laws. So that can definitely be a viable way. Lee is saying, in New York, then, even a monkey can learn some science, but God is necessary to give the science meaning. No, a monkey cannot learn any science. Animals, plants, everything on Earth except for man has no ability to have abstract thought. So that's impossible. They could mimic certain things. They could have instinctual tendencies to put sticks together to grab something that's out of their reach, but that's not abstract knowledge. Tamar is writing, knowing that God exists give you the corner pieces of the puzzle of understanding the world. Once you have the corner pieces, it becomes easier to see the pattern. Okay. And again, animal instinct is not intelligence in any measure. An animal can't reflect on himself, can he? Of course not. Rifkin, New York, is writing, yes, that is true, and also reindeer can put their antlers into the ground and sense where water is to be found. Right, but it's all instinctual. There's no knowledge. There's no abstract knowledge. Okay, Ben Noach is asking a good question. Why do we start from a scientific perspective rather than a moral perspective? Isn't the reason for our knowledge of God a moral one? That's not true, Ben Noach. You see that Adam was not created with morality. They were both Adam and Eve were naked, and they had no sense of shame. It says v'lo yishboshu. All right, it means to say that they were not embarrassed. So the primary knowledge that God made man at the outset was to be involved in the knowledge of truths, meaning sciences, knowledge of God. It was only after their sin that God saw it necessary to create the knowledge of good and bad. But there was no such thing as good and bad prior to the sin, because that is not the absolute knowledge. That's actually something which takes man away from being involved in truths. When you study sciences and all, you're not involved in what's good or what's bad. You're involved in what's true and what's false. See the very first chapter in Maimonides' Guide for the Perplexed. So morality is not really the highest level of knowledge. It's necessary, and that's what we have to study now, but that was not how God made man initially. And Ed in St. Louis is asking, accepting God gives you meanings for science? Yes, I hope that I elaborated, Ed. Let me know if what I said now answers your question. Shoshana is asking, so it is God's unity with all that exists? I'm not sure what you mean. Okay, Rivka made a correction. Good. God created all things to meet our needs? Yes. We say that, I believe it was King David who said that the heavens are to God, but the earth he gave to man, which means everything on earth is for our needs, but even our needs have an objective. When we eat food, that's all to sustain us and then enable us to be strong enough to continue our studies. Rachel in Florida is asking, what are the many brilliant scientists that deny God? Well, if you want to tell me some of the brilliance of their proof that God doesn't exist, I'd like to hear it. But I wouldn't ascribe brilliance to someone who denies God. D. Sands is writing, I find that statement debatable. Animals cannot have abstract thought. Okay, D. Sands, feel free to prove to me how animals do have abstract thought. R. Yosef is saying, both Asimov and Einstein recognize the need for a primal cause. Okay, that is true. Okay. All right. Okay, now just give me 1 minute here. I just want to just review this 1 second. Again, if you have any other questions, feel free to type it on screen. Let me just put a marker on screen. This way I can tell what questions we have approached already. I don't have a web link to give you the text. Maybe, I'm trying to think how else to show you the text. The text here is in Hebrew, and I don't have an English version. Okay. D. Sands is writing, they can teach dolphins to read based on symbols. They're just reacting instinctually. They are not reading. They are just associating a symbol with something. That's called association. That's an instinctual thing. Pavlov's dog, that experiment, if you remember, they rang a bell and gave him food, After a few times, every time they rang a bell, the dog started to salivate because emotionally he associated the bell with food. But that is not abstract thought. Okay? Symbols are not abstract, he's saying. Symbols are just physical things, just like a dog recognizes its owner and associations with food. The same thing. Okay, I'm just putting a marker. This way I could see, after the red entry of questions 2, which questions we didn't address yet. Okay, just give me 1 moment. In the meantime, feel free to type your questions on screen. Okay, just give me 1 moment. I just want to think over one observation. But again, feel free to put any questions you have on screen. There's only 1 or 2 more points I want to take for today. Well, again, we'll pick up tomorrow at 1:30, where we leave off today. Odie in Canada, I would ask you a question, because you're writing, how can you be so certain that such highly evolved animals as dolphins cannot think abstractly? Well, there's 2 things you're saying. It's highly evolved. I don't know what proves that it's any more highly evolved than other animals. It could just be the dolphins have a need to be able to associate more. And maybe because of the need of how dolphins live, that they have a greater tendency for association over some other, over insects. I'll ask you this. Can a dolphin reflect on itself? No, it can't. I mean, that shows it cannot ponder laws of mathematics. Okay. It's true. Ed in St. Louis, animals do feel a certain compassion. They feel, but that's instinctual. That is not abstract thought. That is not intelligence. Okay, tomorrow you're writing it's difficult to deal with these brilliant, quote unquote, brilliant men when they deem those who believe in God to be deceived simpletons. Okay, that may be true. It doesn't mean we can't grasp the knowledge they're talking about, but we know that God exists, and therefore it'll affect us differently than it affects them. And it's true, Ed, that animals do have a certain sense of loss. That's why we're not allowed to take the eggs from a bird without shooing away the mother first, because, as Maimonides says, they have the same feeling on their young, but that is not abstract thought. Okay, so just give me one moment. I want to language is not abstract, these hands. Okay, again, it's association. And if an animal hears another one screeching, that animal that screeches is screeching by instinct. And that sound is something which is also part of the design of the other animals that hear it, that they have a certain instinctual response. It's not an understanding of language, though. Just give me one moment. I just want to, again, think about this one last point. Okay, I think what I'm, you know, the point I'm thinking about, I just want to give it more thought. I'll pick up on that point tomorrow. Because there's something that I still feel, there's more to this, and I definitely would like to have the time to think it through. Okay. And I just want to also quote, King Solomon said that the Reishis Das is Yiras Hashem, meaning the beginning of all knowledge is the fear of God. So he also complies with this concept. Without knowledge of God, we don't have real wisdom at all. And that's a point we'll pick up again on tomorrow. Okay, at this point, if there's any questions, type them in. Otherwise, we'll sign off and we'll resume tomorrow, 1:30, United States Eastern Time. Let me just see your entries here. Okay, Ellie, good point. Even if animals do have some human-like things, they cannot worship. True. All right, Ben Noach, man can live in an environment, get higher intelligence, nor can animals rationalize. Correct, Holly. Okay, Bilam's donkey is a question. It seemed to have spoken. According to Maimonides, that was a vision. And even if you don't hold it was a vision, God can create a miracle, but that does not change the nature of animals. Okay, Ben Noach, correct. Animals do not pause to reflect. Exactly. And Jonah's fish, Tamar, is the same thing. That fish was basically operating like a robot. God made it do certain things at a certain point. It had no will in terms of trying to fulfill God's command. An animal cannot be spoken of as gaining merit. Okay, tomorrow we'll take up other levels of what we're trying to understand tomorrow. Okay, are there any other questions at this point? And again, you should think this through afterwards. And if you can, it would definitely be advantageous to purchase Maimonides' work, the Mishneh Torah. This is where you can actually have the text yourself. Okay, any other questions at this point, please type them in. Okay, my pleasure, Ellie. Rivka, my pleasure. Ed in St. Louis, my pleasure. I hope that this time slot works for everybody, even during the weekday. Perhaps, you know, it would be for the people on the West Coast, before you start your day, you get to have the class, and people on the East Coast of the United States, you can take your lunch break during this time. Okay, Shoshana and BC, my pleasure. Rev Yosef or R. Yosef, my pleasure. Glad you enjoyed. Holly in Chicago, my pleasure. All right, again, think it through. Okay, D. Sands, we'll take up that tomorrow if you want to go more into that about animals. But think about it. You'll see that they do not have the ability. The animals do not have abstract thought. Okay, so we will resume tomorrow. I hope everybody has a good day. Think over the ideas. Really let them penetrate. And these are ideas that, again, they are the fundamentals of all other fundamentals. I mean, this concept is a fundamental of all other fundamentals, and it is the pillar of all sciences, of all knowledge that we can obtain. And even after we sign off over here, if anybody has an English version, or I saw somebody put a link on the chat window before, please put the link again if there is an accurate English translation for everybody else. This way everybody can bookmark that link. Patrick, no. Adam and Eve did not have any sense of consciousness before they ate of the tree. Okay, Rachel, New York, my pleasure. Ben Noach, thank you for the post. All right, Patrick, my pleasure. I'm glad you enjoyed the class. And again, when you have this conviction and you realize that that God exists and this is a reality to you, it will affect all your other knowledge. And it'll help you to eventuate that in an appreciation for God and to have a love towards this creator. And that's really what all knowledge has to culminate in. Okay, Lee, nice to see you again. Quote, unquote, see you. Okay, then. So we'll wrap it up for today, and we'll resume tomorrow at 1:30, and we'll see you all then. Wish everybody a good day. Okay, Ben Noach, my pleasure.